Blog Talk Radio.
A term I define, not a matter of age, but a state of mind. And if you love freedom for liberty, you care. Join the young patriots and fight for it there. Yeah, join the young patriots.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 9 of When the World is on Fire. And we got a very special episode tonight. We got a bunch of old young patriots on that are going to come and chop it up for us and listen to some swap war stories and share ideas and that sort of stuff. And basically, I'm going to try to get out of the way as much as possible and just let them hear. So we got on the line now. We got Hi Thurman and Chuck Armsbury. How are y'all doing today?
Good, man.
I'm good here. Can you hear me good?
Yeah, you're coming through. You're coming through loud and clear.
Okay,
I'm gonna turn.
Good.
So I'm gonna kind of turn this over to Hi, and let's Hi, tell us a little bit about the Young Patriots, and tell us what you got going on now, and you know maybe you could try to interview Chuck a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, you know, Chuck and I talk almost every week, so this should be an easy job, right, Chuck?
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be too hard to tell a couple of stories.
Yeah, well, you know, the Young Patriots, a lot of people know about them. You know, we started back in the 60s in Chicago. You know, we were, you know, just poor white migrants that went to Chicago to try to get a better life, but, you know, it was a lot worse than where we came from, you know, with a lot of poverty and oppression and, you know, the Mayor Daley and his machine that really didn't care too much for poor people. And so, you know, long story short, I guess with this whole thing is through a lot of experiences of being beat down and oppressed, you know, we formed several organizations, and one of them was, you know, of course, the Goodfellas, which was eventually becoming the Young Patriots. But then we got into a coalition with the Black Panthers, with Fred Hampton and Young Lords, Cha-Cha Nanez, Rising Up Angry, Mike James, and others, and, you know, started copying the Black Panther survival programs. But also out of that came also the Patriot Party, in which, you know, Chuck was a a part of up in Oregon, and he was a chairman of a chapter there, and had some very interesting things happen to him, including some time in the federal penitentiary. And he, Chuck, I admire so much. He was a political prisoner, actually. And Chuck, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Okay.
Well,
hang on.
I heard.
Hang on, just a second.
Hang
on, just a second. We got James Tracy on the line now too, and I wanted to let people know that the call-in number, if you want to talk to these gentlemen, the call-in number is 323-843-6094. Now, go ahead, Chuck, and say what you were going to say. Sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, no, that's okay, because I was going to say hi. That was really a very good thumbnail description of our history from the Chicago end. So I just wanted to let you know that. I was a graduate student at the University of Oregon in 1969 and 70. When I first heard about the Black Panther Party, I was married to an African-American woman, and we were living in a somewhat hostile area, you know, to, you know, people of color. So we heard about the Black Panther Party meeting in Oakland. And we went down there together and heard Preacher Man talk. He was the leader of the Patriot Party, I guess you might say the other half of the Young Patriots. But anyway, I got inspired by him, and it was some of his story was the same as my story. I wasn't known as a hillbilly so much as a flatlander, a guy who was born in Kansas. And so, but my life growing up had plenty of obstacles, and it taught me a lot of good things about hard work and staying with it. So, anyway, and I ended up teaching and went back there, and eventually the feds got on to me, and we got set up in a bus, and I ended up for the first time. With a 10-year sentence for a sawed-off shotgun in the car that I was in. Constructive possession, that's the right term. So anyway, it's a long story after that, and it's part of what I wrote in my own memoir, which hopefully will be out soon. It's called The Odyssey of a Mother Country Radical. The word odyssey is essentially my life story, from one barrier to another and onward and onward. So anyway, I don't mean to talk a whole bunch more. I hope other people have follow-up questions, because I turned 77 this month, so it's good to be here. Thanks to James, and thanks to Hi, and so many other good comrades. I'm still here. I'm still breathing.
So hey, James, can you talk a little bit about the book?
Yeah, I can talk a little bit about the book. It wouldn't be anything without these gentlemen, because it's partly their story. Our book is called Hillbilly Nationalists, Urban Race Rebels, and Black Power. The original title that Amy, Sunny, and I wanted to call it, or some variation of, was The Common Cause Was Freedom, after an essay which Peggy Terry, one of Jobs Are Income Bound's in people, wrote, talking about the need for unity between poor people. Our book is if you look at a lot of the early books about the Black Panther Party, the Young Patriots show up in the footnotes, and they're at some of the history. So it's really fascinated by that. But it was one of my political mentors, Malik Rahim, told me about meeting the Patriots at the United Front Against Fascism conference and having it change his ideas about what was possible. I think he said, if those rednecks can get it together, there's hope for the rest of you guys. We got obsessed, found out that, you know, there are many other groups like the Patriots that, white working class people trying to organize their communities, not only for the betterment of their own communities, but
I think we lost. I think James Tracy dropped off. So, hi. Can you talk a little bit about some of the celebratory things that the Panthers and the Patriots and the Young Lords are doing these days in Chicago and around the country, and how that honors that legacy?
Yeah, well, I just got back from the Young Lords 50th anniversary, and was honored to be there and be able to speak and, you know, meet some old comrades. And you know, and they're also, the Black Panthers are also having a series of programs during, you know, last month and this month, and to honor, you know, the comrades that they worked, you know, everyone that worked there, especially Fred Hampton, and, you know, Fred Hampton Jr. is heavily involved in that. We're also going to, for the Young Patriots, November 30th, I will be there along with Poison, Henry Gaddis of the Black Panthers, and Mike James, Rising Up Angry, and we're going to have a re-premiere of American Revolution 2, which was the documentary that was made about the Young Patriots and the Black Panthers back in 69. And so that's put back into 70 millimeter, and it's going to be shown in theaters. And Chicago Film Archives have restored it to its original condition. So that's going to be, you know, going to be used. And here in Alabama, Young Patriots are heavily involved in working with the homeless. We have a program. I put together a coalition called the Homeless Construction Coalition, and that coalition involves several different organizations, and we just do tangible things for the poor, like building platforms to put their tents on, and wheelchair ramps, and, you know, whatever we can help. And I was out today buying some sleeping bags and, you know, socks and things like that for them. And a new program we're going to be working on, a new coalition that's working with musicians and artists, trying to put a coalition together so it can be a spinoff from an organization that I had back in the 60s called Blues to Bluegrass. And its purpose is to do benefits and support community organizations and causes. And it was going to be a local thing, but it's gotten a lot of support all over the country now. So there's a few things going on here.
Cool. Does anybody else want to share the stuff that they have, any events that they have going on that they might want to advertise or, volume, pump up the volume on? Is any of the other callers want to share what they're doing? Chuck or James?
Yeah, I'd like to throw in, you know, part of uncovering the people's history, you know, stories like this is something that many hundreds of people, both working within the academy and outside of the academy, are doing. And they'll be coming together December 2nd at the Howard Zinn Book Fair, the fifth annual one in San Francisco. You can check it out at howardzinnbookfair.com.
That's cool. I remember that, James.
He's a good man.
So here's the question that I have for the three panelists. I was on a panel today and at a university, and I've recently gone through some changes in my life, and I've gone back into the working world as a auto parts person, and it struck me when I was in this panel and in this discussion with all these academics that the stuff they're saying doesn't relate to what the people I'm working with are going through, and that the people that I'm working with to a great degree aren't involved in activism or organizing to any sense. And I wonder, you know, how did the Young Patriots and the Young Lords and the Black Panthers How did they really organize the people, as opposed to what a lot of work is being done is being solely done within the bounds of academia? And I wonder how that's different now. Is it the same now? And you know, what are the type of things that we could do and we could learn from that history that would allow help us to really reach, you know, the people that I work with who, you know, work hard every day and are oppressed and care for their families, and but they may not know the ins and outs of Marxist theory or whatever. So what ways can we reach out to those people, and how can we take what seems to be academically driven and put it back in the hands of people?
Well, I'll take that one.
Okay, go ahead.
You know, I was an academic, and I started understanding early on that we had to move off and get away from academia. In some ways, that was part of the solution to at least some of my compatriots' issues back then. And Bob Lee was right. Bob Lee appears in the American Revolution 2 movie, touching white people, going up close to them, talking out loud, answering questions, and he rides horses. See, you can't beat that for contact with people. And he also left us with a strong message. How do you organize? Same as always. Go out the front door, look across the street, look down the street, look up the street, and begin knocking on doors. That's oversimplified, of course, because I live in a place where there's mostly, until I've been here 3 years in this country place, very isolated little town. And right now I'm on the food bank board. I meet a lot of people, and a lot of people's opinions have changed. This last election did bring out some of the worst and the best in folks. So, you know, keep at it. Be patient with people. Learn to love, you know, the people that you're with. Love the one you're with. So that's me.
Mm-hmm. James, what do you think, buddy?
He's not on. He dropped.
He's not?
He's having some phone problems.
Oh.
What?
He's having some phone problems.
Okay. Well, you know, with what, the way we organized back in the day was through commonality. I mean, you know, you have to find things that's in common. You know, of course, back in those days, it was the Vietnam War and a lot of things that were going on that a lot of people had in common. But also in academia, you know, we had in terms of our free health clinic, you know, there were a lot of medical professional people, social workers, and other people that were just interested in trying to get, you know, services to the poor and trying to change the whole medical field. And then that was happening also in other, you know, in other fields too. And I think that's probably happening, and that's happening now. So I know people in different fields of academia or, you know, professions that are very concerned about, you know, could be gun violence. It could be, the racism. It could be, you know, police brutality, a number of different things, but whatever it is that you have in common, and like in Build the Coalition, in which we built coalition, comes from different organizations, and they do different things, but they have one thing in common. They're concerned about the poor. And so that's what we work on. And then from there, they can go and help support each other's, you know, organization. And that's how the Rainbow Coalition worked. You know, we were all very different, but we had one thing in common. Well, a lot of things in common at that time, of course, was the oppression, and it was racism, and, you know, the police brutality and that type of thing. And that's where the 7 and 8 and 11 point programs came from, survival programs, you know. So, you know, the people needed health care. They needed... you know, the children go to school without food, so, you know, there'd be breakfast for children programs. People couldn't visit their relatives in jail, so there were programs to get people there. And so a lot of people are, you know, were interested in that, you know, not just poor people, but other people that were, you know, from the middle class and in academia too. So that's kind of how you organize that, you can, through the commonality. And that's what you have to look for first, I believe, before you can have any successful coalitions.
You want to add to that, Anita?
Well, I was, I had a thought or two go by my head, but I think in what year, I was going to go back a little bit to how you started, huh? Because in some ways, being who I am, I went from academic life, a PhD level program, to organizing in the community, to prison, to organizing in prison, and out, and back in again, and out again. So it's been a lot of hands-on work for me, but it's also been a lot of teaching, just like we're doing right now. That's what we did in prison. You know, I was a janitor in prison mostly. So, but what I like about you, Hi Thurman, is that you are still with the idea of getting out there and trying to get volunteers who will get a little bit dirty, who know how to drive a nail straight, who know how to put something in for people, something pretty simple. So, see, this is to me the hallmark of who the Patriots have been. And yeah, there's guns involved, but I always tell people about out here, because I live in this really tiny town of 300 people. So there's plenty of guns. People have guns. They shoot. They keep them. They collect them, and so on. But I said, in prison, they have the guns. The guys with the uniforms. See? So we had to figure out how to hang together. I think back to High's point is that you find that as a patriot in McNeil Island Federal Prison and later on in Marion, that was exactly what lured people to the idea that whites and blacks could work together, have some fun together. I mean, who knows? You know, just keep building this thing we call solidarity. So that's the key word that has worked for me.
Yeah.
Something I find. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say another thing with a commonality that's kind of worked this week for me is trying to put together a musician artist coalition, and there was a man from out in around Oakland contacted me. He's a musician, and he works with youth and also has done work in San Quentin. And he's, you know, recorded a couple of songs and wrote a book, which I believe the title is Don't Shoot Me, I'm Just a Guitar Player. And,
okay, good.
So he's bringing that music into, you know, the juvenile corrections facilities and into the prisons, and actually I think there's a movie that's made about it now that's going to be out pretty soon. But anyway, he's joining us in trying to get this coalition together. His name's Buzzy Martin, and if you're going to Google him or look him up, you know. But anyway, that's a common, you know, we all have that common goal, because one of the areas, a new area we're going to be working in is taking some of the old archived letters and songs and stories that we have from prisoners from back in the 60s and 70s and publishing that, you know. And we've also, you know, published our book with the poems and stories and songs from the people in Uptown from back in the 60s, and we're recording that now. So, you know, and that's with musicians. So, you know, we all have some things in common there.
Yeah.
One other thing that struck.
Go ahead.
This is y'all show. I have a question when y'all are ready, but go ahead. It's y'all show.
Well, I was a working kid growing up. I worked on a grain combine at age 10 to 12. I worked in a slaughterhouse all my teenage years. I got married young. I got older children. So you know, that's part of what I guess part of what I learned along the way was that if I talk to people who want to be activists in their community and don't know how to go about it, well, it's exactly the way that anybody with a sense of service can provide, because I was a plumber for 12 years. I actually entered people's homes, and if they wanted to talk about politics or whatever, off we'd go. Or if they didn't, you know, as long as they could pay when at the end of the day. So, you know, those are examples of what I've learned over the years about getting in and learning, I mean, and really taking advantage of the fact that the bottom does hold up the top, and we are the people that build bridges, fix shit, and build the, I mean, it's part of what we've been able to do, and I think that's one of the things we can pass on to other young activists.
So what are the things that strikes me and that I think is incredibly relevant today, you know, is the idea of survival programs. And I think about, there was a speaker today who talked about his family in Puerto Rico after the hurricane. I have a friend who's working in Northern California. There's 26,000 newly homeless people in Northern California. The town of Paradise is incinerated. And what we're facing today is a climate crisis and a climate catastrophe that I don't think anybody is prepared for. And our politicians are dragging their feet. And, you know, it looks like if the human species is going to survive this, that we're going to have to build our own systems of survival. And I want to highlight, like, what my friend Mel Figueroa is doing, who has been on this podcast before. She's she's a former media director for the Jill Stein campaign. And she's taking supplies from the Bay Area up into Chico and, you know, taking care of people to the extent that she can. And this is the time to experiment with these types of survival stuff, because this stuff is just going to get worse and worse and worse. And until we figure out how to, you know, provide for ourselves in terms of health care, like the Panthers, in terms of food, in terms of education that's useful, in terms of housing, you know, until we figure out how to provide those things, we're going to be at greater risk. Can y'all speak to the necessity for survival programs at this current time?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think it's very important at this time that people start looking at survival programs. And one of the projects that we're going to be working on here in Alabama eventually is to purchase or get land donated so we can have a homeless village and farm, you know, and try to work in other programs like, you know, jobs and skills. And I think what we have to do with people is we have to re-educate people, because they've been educated to a point of our scapless system that most people think that that's the only way to go, and that, you know, that system's going to take care of them, even though it's falling apart in their face, you know. So I think we have to get the word out, and we really have to work in survival programs like what we're doing here with the homeless, or, you know, what other people are doing, you know, with health care, you know. And I think I don't see a lot of that happening. I see many organizations going in different directions, but I don't see them actually getting together to really try to, you know, coordinate some services. And part of that is, I think, it's because the non-for-profits have been bought off, you know, so much that they'll have to get boards, and they really don't see the way that they see it, so they have to listen to their boards in order to get money, and it's all coming down to money. And I think we need to get back to we need to get back to the power to the people. And I don't see a lot of that happening. I see a lot of young people now who will, you know, spout that phrase, but they don't really know what it's like. And we need to be able to use social media as a survival program. Because right now it's just keeping people, you know, divided in so many different areas. So, you know, I think Breakfast for Children program is still something that's important. There's 45 million people living under the poverty level, and there's 145 million people who they're just an emergency away, you know, from losing everything they have. And there's no one, and there's, you know, we certainly can't depend on our federal government to help us. And, you know, so I think we have to sort of
Hi, his phone cut out. If you want to answer that question, Chuck, go ahead, and we'll let High finish when he comes back.
I'm going to talk a little bit about what I do here in this little rural community called Hunters. Every Wednesday, we give out free food, and there's a inexpensive clothing store in the basement of this small house. This is a really tiny community. So I sit there, and I have one leg. I lost my leg a year and a half ago to a special infection. So I sit there, and I talk to all the people that come in. I sign them in one at a time, and I look at the record they made. And, you know, it's a litany of woe. I mean, that's one story after another about not working or who wants to or who's sick and who has to go to a special home and so on. And who's hungry? Because it's the same issues. They haven't really gone away. It just sort of slipped by the wayside because in some ways Facebook is such a giant communications system that's recently been found to be they have no control over it anymore. So it's kind of a free-for-all about, is that really organizing? Is that the only way to organize, by, you know, the kind of conflict we see and that people get into and on? Am I still with you?
Yeah, I had to put Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Anyway, so those kind of conflicts will go on until people, as back to High, until you start working together, until you can actually do something together physically to start thinking about what the hell are we going to do to survive, because it's pretty plain here in this little village about who's surviving and who's not and so on and so on. It hasn't gone away. We're still needed. You know, the Patriots survival programs, the Panthers, we're still needed out here. And in that sense, we're just doing our, that's an obligation. That means we've been in service. Have you ever, thank you for your service is one of those lines that you hear a lot. Well, okay. Thank you. I'm glad to serve.
Sorry, guys. My phone got cut off here somehow, and I don't know what part you where it got cut off.
But. You're back on now. So yeah. If you want to go ahead and finish your follow-up.
Don't remember where it was where I got cut off.
Okay.
Well, that's the magic of this social media. But
Yeah.
Well, I was just talking about the way that you people learn to help each other is by literally doing it, spending the time, doing the little things that you can help each other with. I have a neighbor who drives me around with my one leg, and I can go down to the school and walk. So this little community has turned out to be more of a, I'm part of a redemption of the community in a sense, and a constant reminder about who started these free food and free breakfast programs anyway. So that's why they want me on their board, These are country folk. They raise goats, they raise cattle, and so on. And they all didn't vote, and they all didn't like Trump either. That's the sad, that's the story about you can't really count on red and blue areas.
Yeah, and it's really important to put together, you know, if you identify your resources, and, you know, like Chuck's talking about, and you can very easily, it worked out real well with the Rainbow Coalition, because each organization was able to put together a point program that very important points that they thought should be worked on. And then you have other organizations who would put theirs together, and you'd find the commonality there. You know, and I believe commonality and unity is what's one of the most important things that we can look at today. You know, to look at the common things that we can do, and later on we can work on the things that we may not agree on. But it's really important to do that. And yeah, the social media keeps us separated, but we need to learn how to use that as a tool. We actually need to learn how to use that as a survival program, you know, within our groups and within what we're trying to do now and put in. So I guess divisive or being so to stop getting our feelings hurt so much. But I think that's a part of it there, and to look past all that.
So one of the things that's, first of all, for me, the commonality at this day and age is survival, because the human species is not going to survive if we continue down the path we're going. We will be extinct in 250 years. So for me, the commonality is, hey, I would like for the human species to survive forever, because I think humans are incredible things. You know, we do cool stuff. We make art and music, and we have friendships, and we have loves, and it's just amazing what we can do. And I think it's really sad to think about us going extinct. So for me, it really is about survival. But to what you were talking about, how with people getting their feelings hurt, I think there has, at some point in time over the last 25 or 30 years, the role of philosophy or theory has changed. It used to be that the theory served the movement. In other words, if you read Marx, you read Marx for the explicit purpose of putting it to practical use in, you know, survival programs or economic programs or whatever. Now, it's become that the movement serves the theory. So there's all these litmus tests for people who are trying to get into the movement, or, you know, want to be a part of something or want to do something, and they first have to pass these tests as to whether or not they have the right theory. So it's no longer about using Marx to build a program that can serve the people. It's about the people being ideologically perfect in a Marxist way. And so that's my take on I think where we've gone wrong. And to me, it's because there's, you know, the capitalist academy rewards people for walling off their little fiefdoms based on a particular theory. And I think, you know, you have Marxist academics who are acting in a capitalist way by, you know, producing knowledge scarcity. So what do y'all think about that?
Well, I'm going to take that one on, because I think that we probably shouldn't even use the word Marx very much anyway. I mean, it doesn't work around here. I mean, the whole idea of Marx was to separate theory from practice, and always practice was the leading force. I mean, the people who live in theory land, that's fine for them if they got a nice job and everything. But in the practice world out here, you know, where it's dirty, you have to see if any of this stuff really works. And so activists avoid real practice. So they throw these words around. I studied the Red Book. That was part of what we did. I was an academic. I studied a lot of other Marxist things, Maoist things. But you know, unless you can express these things in common words and listen to people real closely, that's the art of organizing in so many ways. Listen very carefully to what you hear people saying and give them the respect. Give them the love they deserve, even if they're half crazy.
Yeah, and if they're going to walk on water, they got to get out of the boat first, you know, because you're not going to be able to unless you get out of the damn boat. You know, a lot of people just want to stay in the boat, and what I term as verbal masturbation, you know. You can't lead a revolution from a classroom or from a book.
I agree.
It takes people. You know, it takes people. It takes knowledge, but it takes people. You know, and some people, from what I've seen, even in some of the, you know, the socialist organizations, democratic socialists or whatever, they, you know, they talk a lot about it, but they can't figure out a direction to go, you know. So
sure.
I think it's real important in getting back to organizations that put together their mission statement or put together a, you know, survival program, a 10-point program, for instance, that we feel that, or not a 10-point, but any point program, feel that everybody has a right to food, everybody has a right to health, everybody has a right to happiness, everybody, you know, has a right not to be getting the fuck beat out of them by the cops, you know. I mean, you go on and on with that, and then and that's where you start. And it's very simple, but they want to make it so confusing, and it's really not that confusing. If you're going, you know, come into my part of the country and start talking, you know, start somewhat talking and using, you know, words. And I'm not saying that, you know, people are ignorant or stupid, but some people just don't understand some of the academic words that people use, and they run people away. You know, I remember going to Chicago, for instance, and yeah, when I got there, I was reading on the third grade level. I didn't know much. And then I come from a family of field workers. We didn't know anything about, you know, vocabulary hardly. And people walk up and talk about the bourgeoisie or, you know, anything. We're like, what the fuck are you talking about? I don't have a clue what you're talking about, you know. And so I think it's very important that we get back to the basics unless we're trying to organize people in academia. You know what I mean?
So I got Andy Willis on the line. Andy, do you want to talk to our two panelists?
Yeah, I just want to say hi and commend them for all the great work they're able to do. And they're both Chuck and Hi are living examples. I've been down with a heart problem here for couple months, but coming back around, and it's really inspiring to hear them talk and, you know, discuss what they're involved in. I think it's really important. I think that, you know, I work with the People's Tribune, and we have a new article about the operation in Alabama. The young patriots are leading there with Hyde. What's it called, Hyde?
Homeless construction.
Yeah. That kind of stuff is really good. And, you know, I think everybody who's pointing out that we're really up against it in this time is completely right. And so figuring out what we're going to do is part of the process. And if we can build unity around all these things that are affecting millions of people, we're going to have a powerful movement, and I don't think it's too far away.
Thanks.
Great.
Thank you, Andy.
We have about 15 minutes left, and Mr. Willis can chime in on this if he wants to. I always ask this question. And it's the same question to everybody, and I ask you, what do you want to see in the future? What is your vision for the future? What is your hope? What is it that you want to see?
Well, around here, this is special condition. We have to have barter fairs for people to come together and barter. That's another old way of not having to use money. And people, you know, it takes a little while. I mean, I guess, my special gift would be patient. I've gotten with this injury late in my life. I've gotten real patient with everybody, so I just listen to everybody's story, and that's respect. I mean, it's Hi's right. It is pretty simple in some ways, but it has to be something pretty tangible at the same time. It can't be pretend fighting on Facebook. I would tell people, well, here's a good solution. It's just doing what you being somebody being mean to you in prison, and somebody's going to say, well, where do you? What cell are you in? Because you can't just say that, ask these things, and go home. Nobody knows who you are, right? Yeah. So these are the limitations of people who live too much, online. Yes.
Yeah. I guess what I'd like to say is, going back to what I keep saying all the time is for people see a point in time where people actually do identify with certain points to, ideas to a point to where they'll take action on it. And, it's just something that's going to be chipping away at. And I don't know if that's going to happen in my lifetime, if there's going to be a revolution or, any major changes, but that shouldn't stop us from trying, because if you look at, in 50 years, I don't know if people are going to know who we were, or 100 years, but that's okay, because the most important thing about it is that if what we do today matters in 100 years, because that's still going to be a continuation of struggles, it looks like. So I'm hoping that people will join the struggle. I hope that people will stop being so complacent, that they just let changes run right by in front of them and thinking that somebody else is going to take care of it, and it just doesn't happen. But that's human nature. And for everything, I'm not saying a utopia, but I'm saying that there damn sure should be some equality in this country that's not here now. And those leaders that we have now, of course, they're trying to strip us of everything we have. And I think everybody should stand up and fight this type of dictatorship. So that's where I would like to see the future.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that our current leadership is suicidal as I've ever seen anybody in leadership. I mean, they just seem hell-bent on everybody dying. And we've already died a couple of times anyway. It's not like we're unfamiliar with it. So I think that's well said. We need to figure out exactly how we want to live together, and it's within our reach.
Yeah, and like the song said at the beginning, if you want freedom, come join the Young Patriots. We'll fight for it together.
That's right.
Mr. Willis, do you want to add anything to that?
Well, there's not much to add. The only thing I've been thinking about in sitting here is that it really is not the people's fault. This system is failing the people, and there's an abundance in the world. There's no need for homelessness, no need for hunger, no need for any of this suffering that's going on. And we have to convince people that this system is, one, failing them, and that, two, that we can have it all. And prevent things like you're talking about, Zach, I think you mentioned like the threat of extinction. I mean, if you can't get on board to stop that, then I don't know what you're worth.
Somebody should write a song about who's a lemming.
Yeah, right. Right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chuck. That'll be your job.
anyone who believes in capitalism is a lemming. All right, guys, we got about 9 minutes left, and probably the last two of those are for the song. And do y'all have any last words that you want to share with the audience before we sign off?
Just power to the people, and, you know, continue the struggle. You know, all I know.
Solidarity forever.
Mr. Willis, did you want to share any last
thoughts? Well, I agree with that. I agree with what y'all are saying and what you're thinking. That you're not only carrying the torch, you're leading the way to a better future. We're not just remembering the past. We're talking about a new future.
Well said.
And I will say, for my 2 cents, these have been 4 of the wisest people that I know. And there was a time when I didn't understand why Hi did the stuff the way he does it. And I'm coming over to Hi's side slowly but surely, and understanding the wisdom in his work. And I can't speak to anybody else's work because I don't know them, but I do know Hi personally. And I think, you know, if we're going to survive, we need to be providing housing for homeless people. We need to be providing food. We need to be providing health care. We need to be providing meaningful education. And speaking of meaningful education, the Cooperative New School next semester is going to be offering a semester-long course on maroon communities with the purpose of trying to understand how people survive outside of a system, and to use some of those practical lessons to apply to today. I am considering offering a semester-long class on basic automotives because I think that's a survival tool that we could have. So I really appreciate y'all coming on. This was a really good episode. And follow us, Young Patriots Organization Montgomery, Confessions of a Mad Redneck. Go to the Young Patriots website, make a donation. Also, finally, I always forget to do this. I'm going to be putting up a GoFundMe page for this podcast within the next week. And so please, if somebody wants to be a sponsor, we'll read an advertisement on the air for you. If you want to sponsor, it's $39.99. It's $39.99 a month, which is pretty high. We really, really need a sponsor to sponsor, at least come up with a little bit of money to sponsor this. And if your organization wants to sponsor it, like I said, if you want to sponsor it for $5, we'll read an ad for you on the air. And also donate to the GoFundMe page. So the GoFundMe page will be up within the week, so keep a lookout for it. Thanks to all the guests, and we'll see y'all next time.
Adios. Thank you.
Not for security alone do I fight, but the freedom to be whatever you might be. If we live in socialism and not slavery, I am a young patriot and I have a creed. I believe in others 'cause we have believed. Not in the rights of rulers, but humanity. To be healthy and happy and to be free. Thank you. patriot, a term I define. Not a matter of age, but a state of mind. And if you love freedom for liberty, you care. Join the young patriots and fight for it there. Yeah, join the young patriots and fight.